Bantam Audio Publishing presents The Bourne Ultimatum by Robert Ludlum. The cacophony seemed out of control, the madness complete, as the crowd swelled through the amusement park and the countryside on the outskirts of Baltimore. The summer night was hot, and nearly everywhere faces and necks were drenched with sweat. The garishly colored, manically blinking lights along the midway were joined by the grating sounds of music metallically erupting out of an excess of loudspeakers. Erratic explosions in the sky lit up its darkness, sending sprays of myriad fireworks cascading over a small adjacent black lake. A slender figure, a cane gripped in his right hand, limped down the midway, peering ahead through the maze of strollers. He was dressed casually but neatly in a jacket and sports shirt, as though the oppressive heat had no effect on him. His face was the pleasant face of a middle-aged man, but worn and given to premature lines and deep shadows under the eyes. His name was Alexander Conklin, and he was a retired covert operations officer in the Central Intelligence Agency. He was also, at this moment, apprehensive and consumed with anxiety. He did not wish to be in this place at this hour, and he could not imagine what catastrophic event had taken place that forced him to be there. He approached the pandemonium of the shooting gallery and suddenly gasped, stopping all movement, his eyes locked on a tall, balding man about his own age with a seersucker jacket slung over his shoulder. Morris Panoff was walking toward the thunderous counter of the shooting gallery from the opposite direction. Why? What had happened? Conklin snapped his head around in every direction, his eyes darting to faces and bodies, instinctively knowing that he and the psychiatrist were being watched. It was too late to stop Panoff from entering the inner circle of the meeting ground, but perhaps not too late to get them both out. The retired intelligence officer reached under his jacket for the small Beretta automatic that was his constant companion and lurched rapidly forward, limping and flailing his cane against the crowd until the stunned, angry strollers erupted in succeeding cries of shock. He then rushed forward, slamming his frail body into the bewildered doctor and shouting into Panoff's face through the roars of the crowd. What the hell are you doing here? Well, the same thing I assume you are. David, or should I say Jason? That's what the telegram said. It's a trap. There was a piercing scream overriding the surrounding melee. Both Conklin and Panoff instantly looked over to the shooting gallery only yards away. An obese, pinched-faced woman had been shot in the throat. The crowd went into a frenzy. Conklin spun around, trying to see where the shot came from, but the panic was at full pitch. He grabbed Panoff and propelled him through the screaming, frantic bodies across the midway to the base of the massive roller coaster at the end of the park. "My God!" yelled Panoff. "Was that meant for one of us?" "Maybe, maybe not," replied the former intelligence officer breathlessly as sirens and whistles were heard in the distance. "You said it was a trap." "Because we both got a crazy telegram from David using a name he hasn't used in 5 years. Jason Bourne. And if I'm not mistaken, your message also said that under no condition should we call his house." "That's right." "It's a trap. You move better than I do, Mo. So move those legs of yours. Get out of here. Run like a son of a bitch and find a telephone. A payphone. Nothing traceable. Call his house. Tell David to pack up Marie and get the kids and get the hell out of there." "What?" "Someone found us, Doctor. Someone looking for Jason Bourne, who's been looking for him for years and won't stop until he's got him in his gun sight. You were in charge of David's messed up head, and I pulled every rotten string in Washington to get him and Marie out of Hong Kong alive. The rules were broken, and we were found, Mo. You and me. The only officially recorded connection to Jason Bourne, address and occupation unknown." "Do you know what you're saying, Alex?" "You're damn right I do. It's Carlos. Carlos the Jackal. Get out of here, Doctor. Reach a former patient and tell him to disappear. Give him the name of somebody you trust. Tell David to reach him or her when he's secure. Give him a code." "What are you going to do?" "Something I hate. Without my cane, I'm buying a ticket for this damn roller coaster. Nobody will look for a cripple on one of those things. It scares the hell out of me, but it's a logical exit, even if I have to stay on the rotten thing all night. Now get out of here. Hurry."
The station wagon raced south down a backcountry road through the hills of New Hampshire toward the Massachusetts border.
The driver, a long-framed man, his sharp-featured face intense, the muscles of his jaw pulsating, his clear, light blue eyes furious. Beside him sat his strikingly attractive wife, the reddish glow of her auburn hair heightened by the dashboard lights. In her arms was an infant, a baby girl of 8 months. In the back seat was another child, a blonde-haired boy of 5, asleep under a blanket. The father was David Webb, a professor of Oriental Studies, and once of the notorious, unspoken of, Medusa. Twice the legend that was Jason Bourne, assassin.
We knew it had to happen, said Marie Saint-Jacques Webb, Canadian by birth, economist by profession, savior of David Webb by accident. It was merely a question of time.
It's crazy, whispered the driver so as not to wake the children. Everything's buried, maximum archive security and all the rest of that crap. How did anyone find Alex and Mo?
Well, we don't know, but Alex will start looking. There's no one better than Alex. You said that yourself.
He saved both our lives in Hong Kong.
But he's marked now. He's a dead man,
interrupted Webb grimly. And Mo, that poor, beautiful man, is dead. They'll take him and break him. They'll shoot him up to the moon with amatols, and his whole life will be on tape. Then they'll kill him and come after me, after us. Which is why you and the kids are heading south, way south, the Caribbean.
I'll send them, darling, not me.
Will you stop it? We agreed when Jamie was born. It's why we got the place down there in Montserrat. Why we damn near bought your kid brother's soul to look after it for us. Marie looked at her husband. What she saw frightened her far more than the specter of the jackal. She was not looking at the soft-spoken scholar that was David Webb. Instead, she stared at a man they both thought had disappeared from their lives. Jason Bourne. Alexander Conklin gripped his cane as he limped into the conference room of the Central Intelligence Agency in Langley, Virginia. It was a long, impressive table, large enough to seat 30 people. Instead, there were only three, the man at the head, the gray-haired DCI, Director of Central Intelligence, Peter Holland. Neither he nor his two highest-ranking deputy directors appeared pleased to see Conklin. Rather than taking his obviously assigned seat next to the CIA official on Holland's left, Conklin pulled out the chair at the far end of the table, sat down, and with a sharp noise slapped his cane against the edge. I want to know why airtight 4-0 regulations were ignored and maximum classified information was released that endangers a number of lives, including mine.
That's outrageous, Alex, interrupted one of the two associates, whose name was Charles Cassett.
I'll tell you what's outrageous, said Conklin angrily. A man out there with a wife and two children, a man this country and a large part of the world owes more to than anyone could ever repay, and he's running, hiding, frightened out of his mind that he and his family are targets. We gave that man our word, all of us, that no part of the official record would ever see the light of day until it was confirmed beyond doubt that Ilich Ramirez Sanchez, also known as Carlos the Jackal, was dead. All right. I've heard the same rumors you have, that the Jackal was killed here or executed there. But no one, repeat, no one, has come forward with indisputable proof. Yet a part of that file was leaked, a very vital part, and it concerns me deeply because my name is there. Mine and Dr. Morris Panoff, the chief psychiatrist of record. We were the only, repeat, only two individuals acknowledged to have been close associates of the unknown man who assumed the name of Jason Bourne, considered to be the rival of Carlos in the killing game. But that information is buried in the vaults here in Langley. How did it get out? According to the rules, before a release is signed for anyone, I'm to be contacted, and in the event I'm not around any longer, Dr. Panoff is to be reached, either one of us legally empowered to turn the request down flat, even if it comes from the White House, the State Department, or the Holy Joint Chiefs. I want to know how that information surfaced, and most important, who got it?
The director picked up the telephone on the table.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?